Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your dose of reality. This is Dr. Tim Dosemagen. We are glad to have you here this bright Saturday morning. And we have some special guests today. Later on in the show, we're going to hear from Andre Bode, who is the head coach of your Tucson Thunder. That is the semi-professional football team that serves the Tucson area. And boy, are they an exciting watch. Then we're going to check in with author Frank Garibaldi, who's going to finish the story he was telling us last week. And he's going to tell us a little bit more about Hollywood Catering, his latest project, and a little bit more about his experiences in Hollywood. But today, we have a special guest in studio, and he happens to be a gentleman who I am honored to be writing the biography of as we speak. We are introducing none other than radio legend Phil Richardson, who is in the studio. Phil, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Tim. You know, I was big on crystal sets, they say.
Crystal.
You know, when you were a kid, you'd take an oatmeal box and wind some wire around it and get a Galena crystal, or your father's double-edged razor, that would be the detector. And you would hear maybe 10 stations all at once if you lived in a metropolitan area. But that was my introduction to radio. Later, an uncle, a bootlegger from Chicago, came down to my little hometown in the southern tip of Illinois and built the second radio in my hometown of Carterville, Illinois, by getting my mother's breadboard. You know what a breadboard is?
Absolutely.
Really, you know, roll out the dough. He brought the components down for a super regenerative radio from Chicago and built it. And we had the second radio in Carterville, Illinois. The banker had one. His was made by Atwater Kent, and mine was made by my Uncle Byron.
Phil, for the listeners, would you mind sharing when you first heard radio, what year that might have been?
Oh, my. It had to be. We had a radio in 1930, and there were about 12 really powerful 50,000-watt stations. And we could hear New York, and we could hear Salt Lake City. But the stations we listened to most often were those in Chicago, which was about 300 miles away. Illinois is a long state. And St. Louis, Missouri. WGN in Chicago, WCCO in Minneapolis, St. Paul. The big station in St. Louis was KMOX.
Yes.
And it had a worldwide signal. And, of course, there were some ultra-powerful Mexican stations operating at almost unlimitless power. You could hear all over the world. And it had English speakers on there. It had Dr. Brinkley, the goat gland man. Ever heard of him?
No.
Oh, well. He started out in Kansas, and they ran him out of Kansas because he was offering an operation for a gentleman using goat glands. And he actually went down to Eagle Pass, Texas, and got on the radio station there, and it was broadcast on, I think it was XERF, and he covered the world with offering this thing. They had a lot of people. Father Coughlin was a Catholic priest, and he was quite radical, and he couldn't get on the air for long in the United States, so he also went there. So we listened a lot to, usually it was country music, interspersed with numerous commercials of various kinds, medicines that you hardly ever hear about anymore.
The goat glands reminds me of Dr. McGillicuddy's magical elixir, but I'm only imagining what it must have been like as a kid in coal country listening to Chicago. Did that open your horizons? Did you want to go there?
Well, I didn't have to worry about going there because during the Depression, I came from a large clan of Scottish coal miners. My father was a child, a baby of a family of 14, and the next generation was born during the Depression, and they, like my brother, at 19 years of age, he graduated from high school, and he couldn't find a job. In fact, I think 90% of the male persons in my home area, that was Williamson County, in southern Illinois, people might know where Carbondale is down there, about 30 miles north of the confluence of the Ohio and Mississippi, were miners, and they weren't working. The mines were down, the factories were closed. It was a tough time in the country, and we haven't seen anything like it since.
And going back to those times, yes. Phil, I understand you were working in the mines by day and working in radio by night. Is that correct?
Well, that was later on. That was about 1946. I had cousins who were coal miners during the day and were motion picture operators in the evening. And it became the local union local for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees and Motion Picture Operators of the United States and Canada, affiliated with the AFL-CIO.
So you're talking 6 to 8 hour shifts. You're going in and you're running reels, four reels, a movie, matinees, double features.
Luckily enough, I got into radio and I got out of the coal mines. The first year I was in radio was 1950, and 2 days before Christmas, I was an employee, the morning man, janitor, chief engineer, and part-time salesman for WFRX in West Frankfort, Illinois. And 2 evenings before Christmas of 1950, there was an explosion in a coal mine there that killed 119 men. And I never went back to work. I was never induced to even visit a coal mines after that. Though as a child, my father for a time was a mine inspector. He was paid by the state to look after the safety conditions in mines, and he would take me down below. The memories are very vague. I couldn't have been over 3 or 4 years old. He would carry me on his shoulder in those dark mines, and I kind of liked the mines.
Did you find when you got into radio and broke in, and when you came to Tucson, was the field of opportunity ripe for plowing, or what was the situation like in those days?
It was ready for rock and roll radio. Radio stations were, quote, old-fashioned, and some of them never changed. But there were some pioneers like Gordon McClendon, a young man whose father bought him a radio station in Dallas, Texas, and he began to develop this thing called rock and roll radio. He and others in the industry found, in fact, a gentleman up in Omaha, Nebraska, was in a bar once. He found that the people there played the same recording on the jukebox over and over and over again, and he said, well, maybe that's what we should do with Dad's radio station. Gordon McClendon followed him in Dallas, and that's how it all developed. Now, Tucson, Arizona. I came here in 1960. I had been the sales manager in Phoenix, Arizona. I had come out due to my wife's health. She received a great relief from Arizona weather. She had lupus, but went in remission for, I think it was 16 years. So we enjoyed the wonderful Tucson, Arizona weather. I should say Arizona weather. Because the company that owned a station, the first rock and roll radio station in Phoenix, and for whom I was the advertising salesman during the week, and on Saturday nights, I was the disc jockey from 6 to midnight. Now, none of the other disc jockeys wanted to work on Saturday night.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Yes.
So they told me, they said, Phil, we understand you've been on the radio, and why don't you run this program from 6 to midnight? What they didn't know was, with the advent of a new rock and roll radio station with Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley and all of those, the audience was greatest on Saturday nights between 6 and midnight, especially around midnight. Mm. And I drew some fantastic ratings that even surprised the owners of the station.
What were the ratings in the heyday of KTKT? Today, you know, you're happy with 2%.
84%, 85%.
85%.
Well, that's due to a young man who's now the foremost broker of broadcast properties in the world, and also he's now into outdoor advertising, billboards, Frank Khalil. His grandfather had a bottling works here. And Frank was expected, as the senior member of his family, to work in the bottling works. Frank's father inherited that business, and his brother still runs it today. Wonderful person. the greatest fan of the Arizona basketball Wildcats by the name of George Khalil. But Frank, anyway, George was three years younger than him. And Frank didn't really want to stay in the bottling works. And I think he was either 15 or 16. He got the job at a brand new station owned by a Mr. Tom Wallace and Art Linkletter. And they put on a little 250-watt station out of a Quonset hut near, the proper street in Tucson, Arizona.
I can remember.
It was near Main Street, Street and North Oracle.
I can remember working out of a Quonset hut in this sun. You'd move away from wherever the sun was shining on that Quonset hut.
Frank worked for him for a while, and then he got a chance to work for Gordon McClendon when Gordon purchased a radio station in El Paso, Texas. And Frank, after working there, brought the format back, persuaded Mr. Wallace and Mr. Linkletter to let him program the station, and, of course, it was just wipeout. I mean, every young person in town turned every radio on to KTKT. And Frank built that station, made it what it was. And I simply came down when they purchased the station from Mr. Linkletter and Mr. Wallace, my owners in Phoenix, who had been originally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, incidentally. I think you know where that is.
Oh, yes.
I'm putting a lot of history, trying to nutshell it in about a two-minute commercial, I should say. And I'm guilty of having run long editorials on KTKT that about which my disc jockey is despaired.
When we come back, we're talking with radio legend Phil Richardson, who is a pioneer of radio here in Tucson. When we come back from the break, Phil, I was wondering if I could read a quick quote from a book by C.J. Brown and Russ Jackson called Tucson Radio to ask if this spurs a few memories, and it has to do with the days you were just describing. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes. I'm here with Phil Richardson. This is your Dose of Reality. I'm Dr. Tim Dosemagin. Stay with us.
What do you get when you combine gritty gumshoes, romantic rogues, heavyweight historians, kids' classics, and thousands of book lovers? The 2016 Tucson Festival of Books. Meet blockbuster authors like Scott Simon, R.L. Stine, Douglas Brinkley, Meg Medina, and Diana Gabaldon. Browse among the hundreds of best-selling authors and illustrators March 12th and 13th on the U of A campus. Free admission, free fun. Become a friend of the festival at TucsonFestivalOfBooks.org. Join the festival March 12th and 13th.
Today, nearly half our nation's fighting forces are members of the Guard and Reserve. When they are called to active duty, they leave behind a family, a community, and a job. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, a Department of Defense agency, honors and protects the bond between service members and their civilian employers. Whether serving our country or supporting those who do, we all serve. To learn more about ESGR, call 1-800-336-4590 or visit esgr.mil.
Education is in the news almost every day. AIMS testing, rising class sizes, ranking schools, high-stakes tests for third graders, shrinking budgets. Only one show in Tucson is bold enough to take on these issues. The State of Education with Robin Hiller. Join the discussion as Robin stands up for the rights of the students, the parents, and the teachers. Saturday mornings at noon here on AM 1030, KVOI The Voice. Online at voicesforeducation.org.
Wake Up Tucson with Joe Higgins and Christy Simone.
Relax, have a great weekend, and sleep better knowing we'll be back Monday morning with an eye on city and county shenanigans. Well, it's almost St. Patrick's Day. And foodie CJ Ham on the DeSimone Daily Double.
Wake Up Tucson, mornings 6 to 8, followed by the DeSimone Daily Double on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to your Dose of Reality. This is Dr. Tim Dosemagin. We're glad to have you back. I'm here in studio with Phil Richardson, and we're going to ask Phil now if he can recollect a piece of work that he did. And this was about 25 years. You talk about being ahead of your time before talk radio broke out as a massive format. Phil, I understand you used to host a show that had a name. Was it the Anonymous Everything Show? Would you mind talking to that?
You're close. Anonymous Anything Society. Quite a lot of talk behind that, about that title and the program. What had happened, we had such a success, I loaded the station down with commercials. And every 3 years, broadcasting stations have to reapply for a license from the Federal Communications Commission. We made an application and told them everything we were doing with the sample logs and testimonials and so on and so forth. And I got a letter back from Newton Minow, who had been appointed by President Kennedy to be head of the Federal Communications Commission. I don't think Newton Minow had ever been in a broadcasting station, but nevertheless, a political appointee. And he's had some famous statements about broadcasting, about a wasteland of programming, so on and so forth. So I had no idea that he was going to write me a letter personally. He said, "Mr. Richardson, your broadcasting station that you're running there seems to program nothing but phonograph recordings and numerous brief commercial announcements. Where is your public service programming?" Well, a lot of people had all kinds of public service programs, you know, and they still exist, but we didn't see any necessity, and the kids surely didn't want to hear that. So, we didn't have much public service programming. We did do announcements for local people, and they would come down and record them, and we always insisted they said, "Thank you, KTKT, for the way in which you are serving your community." This did not impress Mr. Minow. And he gave us a one-year renewal, said, "You got to change your ways. You need to do a percentage of opportunity for people to speak out or whatnot." So I thought, and I'd done it before, that we would, and in fact, I carried the name across three or four states in broadcasting. I kind of like the Anonymous Anything Society, and we named this program a talk show on Sunday nights from 6 to midnight. And it was I don't say it was a great success. It did permit us to get another and continuous three-year renewal, and I had a lot of fun running the program.
That's outstanding. Now, today, if you open up a newspaper, you have what's called Sound Off. People can chime in. They leave a message. That Anonymous Everything show, that format, was people calling in and saying what they wanted to say. And you were doing topical, right?
Yes. You name it, Anonymous Anything. And I would try to handle as many calls as possible and keep all the remarks as short as possible. And, of course, without any profanity. Young people would try to catch me off guard, but that rarely ever happened.
Did you have a delay?
And most of the time I repeated what they had said. I can do that. If you started talking to me right now, a microsecond later, just like a play-by-play man, I would turn my ears off and I would repeat what you have to say. Like, a woman called up one time, she said, "You know, you sound handsome." And I said, "You sound lonesome." And I hit the key, went right on to the next call. I would call people, if they criticized me, creeps. I would say, "I'm going to come down to the candy store where you're working tomorrow and take your broom away. Stick your thumb in your ear and go bowling," were some of my most endearing remarks.
What an adventure that must have been. I want to read from the book, Tucson Radio. Again, this is by C.J. Brown and Russ Jackson. Here's a quote. KTKT faced some big challenges during the late 1960s, and of course there were named competitors here. The biggest challenge came in June of 67 when KIKX signed on. Due to the heavy KTKT spot load, KIKX stole some of KTKT's younger demo in 6 months. KTKT GM Phil Richardson once said that KIKX almost ate KTKT's lunch and would have probably succeeded in doing so if not for a few management blunders. Is that a truthful statement?
Oh, it couldn't be more true. It's just right on target. Thank you, gentlemen, for finding that piece of information that few people know about. The people in KTKT knew what was going on, and there was little we could do about it. We had such a commercial load that these people came in and they the new owner of the station, from Monahans, Texas, incidentally. His father was the third richest Texan, and he was a radio amateur, and he said, Daddy, I'd like to have a radio station. So his first station, I think, was Monahans. Then he came in to El Paso and bought the station down there that was owned by Gordon McClendon and turned it into a rock and roll jukebox. I don't know whether this is well known or not, but he hired some managers that really made some big mistakes. Ultimately, one cost him his license. For the second time in history I've ever known of the FCC saying, you can't have this radio station anymore. This gentleman lost a very expensive investment because he did not adequately look out for some of the stunts that his people were doing. I won't mention but the final one, and that was a fake kidnapping. The manager at the time thought, well, we're getting this new disc jockey in. They put him on the air, and suddenly he disappeared, and they said he didn't show up for work, and the engineer is trying to find out why, who's going to take his place, so on and so forth. What had happened, this guy got a job, went on the air for a short time, and said, well, I want to move my family from Miami, so I've got to take a little time off to go to Miami. So they conceived this story that he'd been kidnapped in the middle of the night. And this, of course, attracted the attention of the police authorities. And he told the sheriff called up and said, is this a stunt of some kind? And, no, absolutely, the man's been kidnapped, the manager said, swore to it. And this was picked up by the other media, and even I was concerned about this gentleman's welfare. I mean, sure, you don't want your disc jockey to be kidnapped. However, there was a call came to me one day from a person who happened to be, by some synchronicity, and I believe the good Lord really loves synchronicities, in El Paso and runs onto this disc jockey on the street. So and so, he said, they're talking about you being kidnapped. Well, this is all just a stunt, he said. This did not bode well with the sheriff. Oh, he said, we're going to talk to the Federal Communications Commission because they had people, detectives, the local police, the Chief Ronstadt, Linda's brother was the chief of police, and he was trying to find out what had happened. And this idiot manager, I'm sorry, fella, but you shouldn't be telling the police authorities a lie.
I'll bet they wanted to tan his hide.
Oh, it cost the investor in that radio station his license.
Oh, man. Now, tell us if you could, and unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of time left. I wish we had more time.
Just drop a quarter in me.
I hope you come back. But if you could, tell me if you could, what was the coolest thing about radio in Tucson in those days as you scan your memory?
I would meet people on the street, and they'd recognize my voice. I said, you're that guy Richardson, right? Yeah, I speak once in a while, do editorials and that kind of thing. I thought you were a big, tall, red-headed guy. And that's when I realized that radio projected an image that you could not describe adequately. You know, the theater of the mind. Somehow they heard this guy on the radio, and because he had this voice, they figured I was a Charles Atlas of the day, or whomever you wanted, you know, a big, strong, tall, red-headed guy, this woman said. And that was the coolest thing. I think the next coolest thing was, and we'll have to save this for another time, I realize, the time we buried a man in a coffin, a uniform coffin, 12 feet in the ground, for the grand opening of a shopping center in Tucson.
You have got to be kidding.
With 25 venomous rattlesnakes. No one could believe that stunt. Wachi Kanoka, the Buried Alive Snake Show. Thank you, Tim, for having me this morning. It's been a lot of fun. You've revived a lot of memories I'd long since forgotten.
I've got to ask before you go. Now, you said earlier today, I believe, that 1970 was the last time you broadcast live on the radio.
Yes, that's true. And it was a very spanglish message. I had helped some local Hispanics, including Representative Grijalva, get their own radio station in Tucson, KQTL. And on the day it went on the air, we had dignitaries from the Hispanic community. The leaders were there at the broadcasting station, and I attempted to use my Spanglish to say good morning, and I didn't do a very good job of it.
I got to ask one more thing before we say farewell for the listeners.
Anything.
You've got a great voice, obviously, for radio.
Well, thank you.
And you've got the experience. With the experience that you've had here, now that it's been 46 years since you've been on the air, as you look back at your career, what would you say, what would you pin your greatest achievement on? Is there something that gives you a great deal of pride? I know you've opened radio stations from the ground breaking on. Anything that really...
I haven't mentioned this to you, but about 30 years ago, I ran a weekend promotion. Recall our city council people. And we started out flat-footed with an immediate 600 volunteers that wanted to help us. Some people had taken over the city hall, and they had raised the water rates at logarithmic prices. And my newsman called me up, and he said, Phil, my phone's going off the hook. This is like 6 o'clock in the morning. People just got their morning newspaper, and they got their water bill, and they are furious about the fact that maybe a $25 water bill was $95. And those that were using a lot of water up in the foothills had something called a lift zone additive multiple to their water rates. My water rate went from about $50 to $150 in 1 month. Mm. So I said, well, they've loaded up this cannon and filled it full of black powder, and all I need to do is light the fuse. We asked the people at a shopping center if we could bring them a lot of people on the weekend, rented some tables. I asked for volunteers, and 600 people showed up to help. And by Sunday night, we had 40-some-odd thousand signatures of Tucsonans who wanted to recall the city council. And it brought about the first and maybe the only recall, municipal recall, certainly in Tucson. And I was just, I was whelmed by the, by the response of the people in that promotion. Could you imagine? A promotion that went it went to the National Association of Broadcasters. They declared Broadcasting Magazine declared KTKT as then it was KCUB, mm-hmm. the strongest radio station in the world. But that's another story yet.
That is a cool story. And I got to say, first of all, what a pleasure it's been having you in the studio. Second of all, for the listeners, please look forward to the biography of Phil Richardson. It's going to hit the streets in about 4 months, and it's going to be published by Author House. Phil, thank you for being here at KVOI this morning, sir.
I've said this several times to you in person. I can't imagine why you would pick me to do. What have I ever done that will sell one copy of one book ever? Thanks for having me, Tim. I've enjoyed it immensely, and I think if you had 3 straight hours, I'd never shut up unless you went to your next guest.
And if we had 3 straight hours, we'd talk about Phil's service in the Philippines during World War II and some of his work with the erstwhile Japanese commanders who ran the Philippines before MacArthur took it back, along with Phil and his service to the country. We're going to take our second break. I don't know how we're going to top that first half hour, but when we come back, we're going to give it a try, and we're going to throw the bomb, and we're going to talk to head coach Andre Bode of the Tucson Thunder. Stay here on Your Dose of Reality.